Hey, what's up, everybody? This is Joey Galvez. I want to tell you guys a little bit about the Department of MetaHuman Affairs. This one is a story about a team led by a retired sidekick, two felons, a failed actor from Broadway, and a reprogrammed cyborg. But their first mission is to stop the criminals who have robbed a bank, and they will have to set the world at ease. You're going to get 180 pages of entertainment, action-packed awesomeness right here in the first six issues in a collected hardcover volume one. All you got to do is head on over to Kickstarter.com and type in the Department of MetaHuman Affairs or DMA and check it out right now.
Age of Radio.
Oh, it's a pre-roll time. The Cheers to Comics podcast is proudly brought to you by Inked Marketing. Inked Marketing, your solution to crowdfunding comics. Well, the Inked Marketing crowdfunded comic for this here episode is, well, I'm proud to say, a friend of the show. The Smiths, the nefarious Smiths, Trouble in Tijuana, is coming back to Kickstarter, man. Now, you may recognize that name, The Smiths. Where have you heard that name before? Well, if you listen to this podcast, and you have been for a very, very, very long time, well, I mean, as long as the podcast has been around, then you know. Then you know that's where you heard the name. Doug. Doug Diggins was my second guest ever on the show. Back when they were first kickstarting the first issue of The Smiths, since then Doug has been kind enough to continuously send me these issues and annuals that he's been putting out, and this book has grown tremendously in quality and in everything. Like, the nefarious Smiths is my shit. So, if you want their next little story, what is the nefarious Smiths? Well, it's about the bad guys. Yeah, it's a, you know, family, you know? What if the Fantastic Four were evil? Essentially. Kinda. In its own very awesome way at the same time. So, check out The Smiths coming soon to Kickstarter. The Nefarious Smiths Trouble in Tijuana. Once again, proudly brought to me to bring to you by Inked Marketing Solutions, your solution to everything crowdfunded when it comes to comics. Hello again. Welcome back to the Cheers to Comics podcast. I'm your host, Brian Lane, and this is episode 303. The 303rd episode of the Cheers to Comics podcast will be, in fact, a creator corner, and the creator that I cornered on this here episode is the Kickstarter queen, Madeline Holly Rosing. The brilliant mind behind Boston Metaphysical Society. She's been doing Kickstarter since way before Kickstarter was trending and cool and neat. Now, she's a trailblazer, baby. This is what she is. So we talk all about her newest chapter of Boston Metaphysical Society, currently now on Kickstarter. Make sure you go to Kickstarter and search Boston Metaphysical Society and get in on that. You're going to want some of that. And the creative community that's behind this book is tremendous. It's tremendous. So, yeah, make sure you back Boston Metaphysical Society. Without further ado, though, I'm not going to ramble on anymore. I'm just going to give you this incredible, awesome interview with the one and only Madeline Holly Rosing. All right, Madeline Holly Rosing, how are you? I'm so happy to have you on the show.
Well, I'm so happy to be on the show. Thank you for making time for me. I really appreciate it.
Scheduling has kind of been a little bit of a thing, but we did it. And I knew that there was no way I was going to not do this. I was just kind of telling you a minute ago, but just so the listeners know as well, you do have a fan base. And through other creators as well. You are very respected through a lot of other creators' eyes for being a Kickstarter, you know, just you coming out with a Kickstarter comic. This is your first Kickstarter comic?
Oh, no. This is number nine.
Number nine. Awesome.
This is number nine. a good friend of mine, Charlie Stickney, who does White Ash.
That explains a lot. Okay, it's well, all coming together now.
Well, I actually started long before he did.
Yeah.
And
okay.
We actually had lunch together before he even launched, and now he's going gangbusters. But he made a comment on Twitter, you know, like last week, you know, very, you know, encouraging people to support the Kickstarter. But he mentioned, he goes, it's one of the longest running comics on Kickstarter. And I went like, what? Wait, oh my God, he's right.
No kidding.
I had no idea. We've been on Kickstarter. Yeah. Like I said, this is Kickstarter number 9 for us. The first one, which I think was back in 2013 or 2014, was not successful, and we learned a lot from that and restructured, re-strategized, and been running basically one a year since then. There was 1 year we ran two, and have been successful ever since. But yeah, I mean, it's been a slow build over the years. Yeah. And you know, you just have to be patient and keep working it.
Well,
you know,
I mean,
it never really stops.
Well, that explains why your fan base is so strong. You know, it does. And I mean, shame on me for not knowing how many Kickstarter. I mean, you're a Kickstarter just pro at this point. I mean, 9 Kickstarters in. I mean, that's you were doing Kickstarters way before Kickstarters were ever thought to ever be cool. You know, I mean, now all the cool kids are doing them. You kind of paved the way, I guess. I mean, for you to be doing Kickstarters before Charlie Stickney, and then now to see Charlie Stickney doing what he's doing on Kickstarter, I mean, we got to think that in some offshoot kind of way, there's a little bit of responsibility on your end when it comes to, you know, inspiration maybe. I'm going to give you that credit. I'll give you that credit, whether or not you're going to take it. But
Charlie is a very smart guy, very talented.
Really is.
So I have no doubt that, you know, he not only looked at my previous campaigns, but many other previous campaigns and put together his strategy, which is why he's so successful. I've actually written a book called Kickstarter for the Independent Creator.
I saw that. And you can get that on Amazon or pretty much anywhere, right?
Yeah, any ebook platform. You know,
awesome.
Anywhere. It's the second edition is a green cover. It did originally come out in 2017, but I do update it every year. Like when this Kickstarter's over, about a month or so after, I'll go in and I'll update, because it's a constantly evolving thing. So yeah, I'll just add little things that I've learned or remove things that are no longer relevant.
Understood. Totally.
Yeah.
And I mean, I think that's how all literature should be, too. I mean, if there's textbooks in school from 10 years ago, I mean, you're not really teaching the right things. It's not relevant. So, I mean, to have a textbook on Kickstarter from, you know, 5 years ago or however long, it makes sense to update it for sure. And I think that just says so much more about your character as a creator as well. Because you could keep all the secrets to yourself. You can have all the Kickstarter success. But the fact that you do care enough for the up-and-comers out there to share your experience in that way, it says a lot about your character as a comic book creator as well. So I think that's definitely something to admire.
Now, as far...
I mean, I'm going to... Don't get me wrong. I'm going to get so into Boston Metaphysical Society.
That's fine.
But I want to know a little bit more about the people that create the thing I love. I think all creators have an awesome origin story. And I gotta know, Madeline, I mean, how long, at what point did, you know, comics really become a part of your life? I mean, when did you start consuming them? Let's put it that way.
I'm a latecomer to comics.
Okay.
I mean, very, very late. I had originally developed this story as a TV pilot when I was in the MFA screenwriting program at UCLA. And though it had done well, you know, in some competitions and people liked it, this was before, you know, steampunk, it hadn't really hit mainstream, or, you know, the whole aesthetic really hadn't. So it was suggested that I turn it into a graphic novel to use it as, you know, marketing material to bring it back to TV or film. Well, so I went back to school, took a number of sequential art classes, learned how to write a comic, and that was my first entry into independent comics. Okay. My brother has probably one of the largest graded collections of Daredevil comics in the United States.
No kidding.
But I was never interested. I was never interested in superheroes. And I didn't realize that there was such a thing as indie comics until I took this course. And then I was really pissed off because I thought, this is great. These stories are great. These are interesting.
What stories were you finding? I mean, were you finding the underground stuff like Crumb, or were you finding stuff like The Walking Dead and Chew and that kind of, you know,
It's probably more mainstream, like Why the Last Man, okay. Astro gotcha. City, you know, Watchmen. You know, reading that the first time was kind of a brain bender, but which I think is fair for anyone to read it for the first time. Mm-hmm. And what else? And then later on, I started diving into like Lady Killer and Monstrous, and eventually Ascender and Descender. My husband doesn't particularly like graphic novels, but every once in a while I'll run across something and I'm going to go like, you're going to like this one. And so I go and buy, you know, the trade of it, and he just devours it because, yeah. You know, I understand his tastes. And so he just, you know, he loved Lady Killer. He'd probably like Why the Last Man. I have not gotten that for him yet. But yeah, it's, it wasn't the underground stuff. Cause I didn't really know that the underground stuff existed, you know, right. In the beginning. So it was whatever was on the syllabus.
No, I totally get that. I mean, I can't imagine a lot of intros or comics throwing, you know, Crumb at you right off the bat. You know, that's like AP level type of stuff. So we know it kind of inspired, or at least started what you were looking for. You know, you're definitely not superheroes or anything like that. Then you're taking the class on writing comics. At what point do you, I mean, when's your breaking moment? I mean, when do you realize, okay, this is the story I have right here, and because you said you had something you had been working on.
Yeah, it was, the pilot was already done, and so I adapted it into a 6-issue miniseries.
Okay.
And so, I mean, that was initially just my plan. I was going to do the 6-issue miniseries, use it as marketing material, and move on with my life. Except during all of this, because it took 5 years to produce this thing, I discovered I really like writing comics. And I was invited to, you know, do some anthologies and, you know, little short stories. And that was great to go play in somebody else's sandbox for a while. And you know, and hand it off and say, here, you deal with the production. I don't have to. Yay.
No, how awesome is that? I mean, that's like the dream gig of just, I mean, not just doing anthologies, but being asked to do an anthology as a side gig, because, I mean, it's no pressure. You get a, I mean, there's pressure, mm-hmm. obviously. I mean, because you want to do justice to, you know, the sandbox that you're playing in.
Absolutely.
But you don't have to create anything. You don't have to, you know, I mean, it's as far as new characters or, you know, things like that. It's just,
correct.
And then in the end, you don't have to worry about the technical side when it's all said and done. You say, here's the thing. And, I imagine that's got to be a good just palette changer, I would imagine.
Yeah, it was nice. I did a couple last year, and that was just a nice change up from, you know, at sometimes I have to step away from Boston Metaphysical because it's so all consuming, particularly since I've expanded the mediums. I mean, obviously it's a comic, which, you know, there's also a prose anthology and prequel novel. And we are in pre-production for the first audio drama.
Oh, that's awesome.
Yeah, called The Ghost Ship. Yeah, this coming weekend, we're doing callbacks for the leads. And we've got some fabulous actors on board. So that I hope to have on Kickstarter in the fall.
Awesome. Okay, so you're going to kickstart that as well. Amazing.
Yes.
I love it. You're not the first creator I've talked to this year that's decided to, you know, kind of venture off into audiobooks as well. And, you know, that's, it's fascinating because I'm going to be blunt. I never really got into audiobooks until The Sandman came out, and then I had to know. And now I have this desire to want to consume so much more, you know, of these audiobooks. And, I think it was a Chuck Pinot, I believe, is the other guy that's been on that has an amazing audiobook as well. So my point is that I'm seeing more and more of this, and it's starting. I think this might be a trending thing here. And once again, you might be one of the people to maybe start pave the way to start audiobooking graphic novels. I mean,
yeah. Well, the difference is that this is a standalone story that is set in the same universe, but it's not based on any graphic novel.
Oh, okay.
This is an original story.
Oh, that's awesome.
And also there is a difference between audiobooks and audio drama.
Ah, yes.
Audiobooks is your normally, because you can't afford it, you usually have one person and they're basically reading and acting out from an actual text and the exposition. What I'm doing is an audio drama, which is a full cast of voice actors with sound effects. I have a sound engineer, composer, so there's going to be music and sound effects. So think of it in terms of the old time radio shows.
I gotcha. Yeah. See, I'm glad you explained that, because I mean, like I said myself, you know, I'm just now getting into this. I didn't realize there was a difference between an audio book and an audio drama. That's useful knowledge for sure. Being a graphic novel creator, what's the process of, you know, going about and finding your sound engineers and all that? Is this just people that you've known throughout time, and, you know, you just know someone that happens to do this? How does this come about? What made you decide to do this?
Actually, it was the woman's name. Her name is Eddie Louise, and she is the writer, producer, director of an audio drama by the name called Sage and Savant. It was on for 6 years. Her husband Chip was the sound engineer and the composer. They're friends of mine, and this was all her idea. We were at the Nebula conference together, and she says, you know, she goes, "Boss, you should have an audio drama. You absolutely have to have an audio drama." And I said, "Well, you know, I'm going to need help here. Can I hire you and Chip?" And she said, yes. So they are like 110% on board and having a great time. Yes, everyone is getting paid.
Okay. That's not the question I was going to ask, but I'm sure a lot of people were wondering. So thanks
wondering. Yeah. I mean, yes, they have donated a lot of their free time in educating me in this process. Absolutely.
That's the privilege of friendship, though.
Yeah. And, you know, you obviously don't want to abuse that,
right?
But yeah, it also helps when I can say, well, I am a rookie with audio drama, but I have brought on board two veteran people who know how this process works.
Producer credits make a difference. Producer credits can sell. That's for sure. I love that. I want to see more of this. I definitely, I'm very interested in this Kickstarter for the audio drama as well.
Yeah, because I'm not interested in redoing a story that I've already written in a different medium. I'm always going to do a new story.
That's cool.
I'm not going to do that, because to me, that's a waste of my time. And two, why would, you know, the readers want new material, not old material rehashed in another format? I mean, maybe some will, but I'm not going to do that. So it's always going to be something new.
That's mighty respectable too. I mean, Neil Gaiman went and he audio drama some old stuff. I mean, here you are making I'm gonna put you at a peg above Neil Gaiman, because he didn't make anything. I'm gonna say that because you make a good point though, and I say that jokingly, but at the same time you do make a good point, and I want I want to put that in perspective for people, because, you know, this is... yes, Sandman is an all-time classic and a literary great that everybody in the world knows. And it makes sense to do an audio drama of that. It totally.
Absolutely.
And hire the greatest actors in the world.
For a
Kickstarter comic book creator to say, no, there's more material out there. I have so much to say. You know, I'm going to try something different, new in this medium, but still kind of keep it interesting within this realm that I've already kind of created. I have just the utmost admiration and respect for that. I love a creator that has an abundance of ideas. I really do. And one that can also, you know, step outside the box. You know, I'm seeing so much of this since Kickstarter, since this boom in 2020 of Kickstarter. I mean, everything now is just... the ship has been rocked. You know, that's all. Yeah. I mean, there's no doubting that. I can't wait to see what it levels out to be, though, because it's been fun watching all of this develop and all the ideas that, you know, you creators have had. Probably for the sake, I mean, from not being on the road, you know, having a little bit more free time on your hand to you know, come up with new ideas and stuff, because you don't have to travel and do these conventions. I guess I'm going to say that's the only silver lining to not having conventions, is the advancement of Kickstarter. But overall, I mean, I'm blown away with what you're doing. Now let's talk about the thing that you are doing. The book that's currently on Kickstarter now, starting soon.
It's on there right now. We launched on March 30th.
March 30th.
Yeah, it's called... Boston Metaphysical Society, The Book of Demons. It is the fourth sequel. And it is a standalone, but it is a continuation of the previous sequel, Ghosts and Demons. I kind of refer to it as a duology.
Okay.
Because the story just, it does kind of segue into, right into what has happened previously. And it was a lot of fun. We are funded.
That's awesome.
Which is,
I'm pulling it up on Kickstarter here now. I want to make sure I get my backing in. For some reason, I thought that this was a week out. But, yeah.
That's okay. You've been busy, remember?
I have been busy. There's so many... I get so many Kickstarter requests. But I want to... I definitely... There's... it'd be silly not to back this one. This is one I have been looking forward to, because you got a hold of me way in advance.
Yes.
So, I've been anticipating it. I guess I just kind of overshot the date. But yes, it's funded already. A week in. That's amazing.
We were actually fully funded in 6 hours.
6 hours.
That's a first. That's a first.
What's typical for you? I mean, with your last Kickstarter?
Usually about 24 to 48 hours.
Yeah? That's still amazing. I mean...
I've worked as a Kickstarter consultant, so, you know, I have to walk the walk and talk the talk, and when I launch, it's got to be... you know, demonstrate that I actually know what I'm talking about.
Hey, well... Once again, just another quality of yours to respect, Madeline. I mean, 6 hours? 6 hours on this last one?
That's six hours. My husband just started laughing. He goes, you know, you're funded in 6 hours. I said, yeah, I don't know if we'll ever be able to repeat that, but that was kind of fun.
I mean, I wouldn't put that past you. I wouldn't. I mean, I was blown away with how many people beforehand, how often your name came up, Madeline, really. I mean, you are talked about with some people that I truly admire and respect. So, you're there. I mean, as far as Kickstarter goes, I mean, you're at the 9 Kickstarters in doing 6 hour funds. That's amazing. That's top tier is what that is. So, something to be looking up to, that's for sure. All the more reason for people to go out and pick up your book as well.
I mean, I wrote it. The original idea behind that book is, I think I had done about 4 Kickstarters by then.
Okay.
And I was seeing a lot of really great projects that were doing the crash and burn. And it was just because the creators weren't prepared for doing a crowdfunding campaign. Mm. So the book is essentially a field guide to crowdfunding. So it goes over, you know, pre-launch strategy, campaign strategy, fulfillment, postage, you know, how to build a fan base, things like that. And for those who are a little bit farther along, you know, you can read through it and you can like, okay, this is the spot where I need to start from the book and then work forward. And I always tell people when they pick up the book, just read through it first and then go back and make notes that are particular for your campaign.
Mm, okay.
Depending on what your level is, because some people are going to read it and they know nothing. And there are going to be some people there who have like a, you know, a moderate email or newsletter list. So they don't have to work on that, but they need to work on all the other stuff.
Understood. All right. I like that. It makes a lot of sense because you're absolutely right. I mean, there's not just you're either brand new or you're a pro. There's so many different levels of, you know.
Yeah, there's a lot of different levels out there, and even just as a refresher on stuff, if you've forgotten something, I have a fun story. It was a few years back. A gentleman bought the book at a con on a Friday night. He came back the next day and he says, I read your book and I decided I'm never going to run a Kickstarter campaign. And I told him that was the best $10 you ever spent because you now know what is required to have a successful Kickstarter campaign. And if you don't want to do that, that's okay. It's okay if you want to fund your project in another way. Yeah. But if you want to be successful on Kickstarter, this is what you're going to have to do. And it's a, you know, it's a second full-time job. It's a lot of work. And if you're going to expend that energy, it's just, why put yourself through that if you don't want to? Mm-hmm. Yeah. You know, why? And if you have other options to do your project, great. Go do that. You know, you don't have to do a crowdfunding campaign. There's lots of other ways. And he just kind of looked at me and blinked a few times and then said, you know, you're absolutely right. You know, I said, you just saved yourself a month of agony. Why would you want that if you're not prepared for it?
And I've seen it so many times. I've seen so many Kickstarters launch out of nowhere. I'm like, I don't know where this came from. I've got my, you know, I thought I had my thumb on the pulse of, you know, this community. Kickstarter, I've seen no pre-launch for anything. And then 3 days later, you know, people are literally begging online. Hey, can you be our third backer? You know, and it's like, oh, man, it's rough. You know, and people think you just set it and forget it. And it's, you know, it's the easy way to get published, you know? You don't have to go through the hoops of Marvel or Dark Horse or... No, it's just a different kind of hard is all it is.
it is a different kind of hard.
Comics aren't easy.
As you personally know, I contacted you, 2 months ago?
Yeah, yeah.
That's when I start setting up interviews because you're busy, you have a schedule, I respect that. So it's like, hey, when can you fit me in April? We have plenty of time... And you're like, oh, okay, yeah, we can do that. And so I set up close to 20 interviews, you know, 2 months ago.
That's
where it starts.
Yeah, I mean, it says so much. I mean, just that in itself right there, that's an important key to Kickstarter. It's just not, hey, I got a Kickstarter that launched last week. Can I get on your show? I get that so much. I'm like, yeah, you can come on the show, but we'll just be talking about how your Kickstarter funded or didn't fund, you know, I mean, I'm not going to be able to, it's going to be long gone before, you know, but I'm ever able to air the episode. And, you know, I see that mistake made all too often. And I feel bad telling, you know, it's not that I don't like it. It's just, I don't think I'm going to be able to help you. And,
it does take long range planning. And, you know, fortunately, as you realize, this is not my first rodeo. So, you know, I just do, you know, 3 months ahead of time, I start seeding it out. It goes into my newsletter. You know, I mention other things. I start contacting people. You know, the word starts slowly going out, and then it just gets ramped up as we get closer and closer and closer. So I don't have to do everything at once. It's just little bits, mm-hmm. you know, over 3 months and go from there.
Yep.
And that's just for the Kickstarter. That doesn't mean for the planning of the actual graphic novel.
Oh,
that
yeah, happens. No.
That's like a year ahead of time.
Oh, totally.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. No, that's that's a whole nother mistake. That's a whole nother mistake to be made. Is saying I got this idea on Kickstarter. You know, it's, that doesn't work. let's talk about Boston Metaphysical Society to its core. I mean, where does this come from? Where do you plan on going with it? I mean, you said it was a screenplay. Was this the screenplay that you originally adapted?
This particular story, no.
Okay. It was a different screenplay that you originally adapted.
No,
okay.
It's the original pilot was adapted into our first 6-issue miniseries, which is now in trade paperback.
Gotcha.
And so since then, all of these sequels, they're sequels. They're brand new stories. But just to throw this out here for those in your audience who never heard of this before, the story is about an ex-Pinkerton detective, a spirit photographer, and a genius scientist who battles supernatural forces in late 1800s Boston.
It sounds amazing. So I mean, I just hearing that pitch, I think so many things that I love all mixed. I mean, the first thing that comes to mind is Ghostbusters in a very, very cool way. I mean, an even cooler way, to be honest, when you mix, I mean, the character dynamic that you throw in there, and then the time period setting, it sounds like something that I should have been reading a long time ago. So perfect.
It's certainly been a lot of fun to write, that's for sure. And, you know, how the characters have evolved and changed, and, yeah. That's been interesting, and brought in a new character, Alma, our African American female scientist, is relatively new. She wasn't part of the original team. The original team was Samuel Granville and Caitlin. Okay. Granville Woods, by the way, is an actual historical figure. He lived during that time period.
No kidding.
And in the original 6-issue miniseries, I've also brought in Bell, Edison, Tesla, and Houdini.
I love it. Oh, the more you talk, the more I'm trying not to get over here. I have the page pulled up right now. I'm just trying not to click on the keyboard to interrupt. I'm so ready to back this book.
Yeah, the first sequel, The Scourge of the Mechanical Men, features Granville and Tesla. That wraps up the Tesla arc from the original series.
Okay.
And then we kind of branch off from that, and Spirit of Rebellion starts focusing more on Caitlin and her development of her psychic ability after what happened in the original 6-issue miniseries.
All right. Awesome.
As they start developing in ways that she never anticipated. And Alma becomes a critical part of that in studying. You will see little bits of the scientific method within the graphic novels as they try to, you know, study her and what she's capable of. So it's pretty, it's everything. Obviously there's supernatural and stuff that, you know, clearly doesn't exist in real life. but It is grounded in reality. When I can make the science accurate, I do.
That's awesome.
I love that. If I can't, you know, sometimes the story has got to be what the story is, and
because it's comics, you know. If I mean,
it's comics, yeah.
If you wanted to write a textbook, you write a textbook. But you know, yeah. I want far fetched out of my comics. You know, no matter, while also being grounded, I love that. You know, to throw in real science in there is always something I truly admire. I mean, Iron Man's my favorite thing, and it's because of his science. It's not his shiny suit, you know. So, I mean, it's knowing that you are, I can't think of the word right now, but just really involved in the actual, you know, making sure that you're going to have those people out there that are going to try to nitpick some things for sure. But at the same time, you can also say, hey, no, this is, you look this up, or, you have the scientific backing to, to prove it all. I loved it. I love it so much.
Yeah. There's a fun thing in the original 6-issue miniseries that Granville talks about. And that's for some of the nerdy chemistry geeks and, in the audience. Because, they'll go like, she got that right. That's right. And so that was a lot of fun.
That's going to create you a heck of a fan base, too. I mean, that's when your cult following comes in. Because, the more niche and weird of things you can get people to follow, or, nerdy, the thing is that you can get people to follow. I mean, I think the stronger the following becomes. And those little things like that, I don't know. I understand how it funded in 6 hours. Let me put it that way. I understand. The more you talk about this, my mouth's watering. This sounds amazing. It really does. So you're a Kickstarter pro. I would imagine you've got some pretty awesome incentives involved with this book, right?
Yes, we do a lapel pin every year because I do steampunk conventions, obviously. Awesome. And they love the lapel pins. So this year we have the Plague Doctor. And it was designed by Alejandro Lee, and he did a great job. There's a photo of it on the Kickstarter homepage. But I have to tell you, it actually looks better in real life than in the photo.
Yeah.
So it came out really well.
That's awesome.
This is the first time we're doing a stretch goals. Got some great digital comics for everybody, but also we have some beautiful prints from of Caitlin from Roberta in Granada.
Oh, cool.
And Ashley Woods, who did Niobe and Bitterroot, I believe.
Mm-hmm.
And magnets. I had one of our first pins we did was an owl pin, and a steampunk owl. So we've now turned that into a magnet. So it's gold with an owl. And there's a picture of it on the site. And also the Plague Doctor pin turned into a magnet. So we've actually achieved those stretch goals. So everyone who is pledging to a $10 and above physical reward will get the two prints and the magnet so far, plus a bunch of pile of digital comics. And I have some more stuff in the wings, so
wow.
We'll see where we go here.
That's a heck of a deal. $10, a $10 backing gets you a physical. Wow.
It's $10. Well, it's $10 plus shipping. Mm-hmm. For just the book, the hard copy of Book of Demons.
That's awesome. I mean, I see people try to charge that for the digital copy of some of their books sometimes. And, sometimes it takes a little bit more than 10 bucks to get a book in your hand on these Kickstarters, is what I'm saying. And for you to, that's $10.
And
that's nothing to back.
And this is it's 48 pages, perfect bound.
No kidding. That's a steal. I mean, I want to know who your printer is. maybe we should just keep that to yourself. That's amazing. That's an incredible deal. It really is. 48 pages for $10. I can't get over that.
This is a little bit longer. The previous ones were 44 pages, so this
still,
one's a little bit longer. Yeah.
Still, I mean, that's incredible. Well, it sounds like you have, a lot of plans for this universe that you've created.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, do you have anything else in the works outside of Boston Metaphysical Society, or anthologies? Is there anything in the works that you want to talk about?
Trying to think. I mean, I've been doing some flash fiction during the pandemic just to get my mind off of other stuff, and developed this one character that I really like. And I think when I'm done, I'm also writing a trilogy of novels that are based in the Boston Metaphysical. Yeah, it's set. They're set during what I call the House Wars, which is the equivalent of the American Civil War.
Okay.
It starts, you know, about 35 years before the first graphic novel, the original six-issue miniseries. And once that is done, and I spied an artist on Twitter, I think, Twitter or Facebook, on Twitter, who I saw his stuff, and I'm like, I want him to do my book cover, so I got to talk to him.
It's awesome. Oh, I love it. Isn't it amazing when you find an artist that you're drawn to like that?
That happened with the first novel, Storm of Secrets. Louisa Pressler did the, I mean, you can go find it on Amazon. Actually, it's also on, you can get it. It's part of the Kickstarter in one of the upper tiers. But yeah, she's won awards on it. I mean, if you just scroll down and you see, you can't miss it. It's gorgeous. Absolutely what she did. Yeah.
Yes. Did we talk about the artist on? I don't think we talked about the artist on Boston Medical.
No, we have not.
Is this the same artist all the way through that you've had?
No. Okay. Emily Hugh. Emily Hugh was my original artist for the six-issue miniseries. She did a fabulous job. Found her through a mutual friend, and she'd just gotten out of school. Mm-hmm. And Gloria Kelly and Fariza Kamaputra were the colorists on board. Troy Pateri, my letterer, has been with me since the very beginning. He's kind of like, he's my anchor. He's amazing.
That's awesome.
Once we were done with the six-issue miniseries, Emily needed to move on, you know, to bigger and better. And she's fabulous. So, yeah, that's what she did. And Gwen Tavares came on board. Gwen,
I've got some preview pages here. And
yeah.
I'm
Gwen impressed. Does the art and the coloring.
Wow.
And she was like the perfect segue because the characters had grown and matured, and she's is a little bit older. Not that Gwen is old, because she's not. She's like 30 something. I don't know. She's young. They looked exactly the way they should be as they matured because of what they had been through in the earlier issues. And so, yeah, she's been with me for the last four sequels. So,
awesome.
And I'm hoping she will continue on. She's gotten a lot more work because of working for me.
I can imagine.
She's improved. She did a fantastic job on the cover. I'd actually had the idea for this cover before the previous book, Ghosts and Demons, but I knew it wouldn't work for Ghosts and Demons. So I just kind of put it aside and said, okay, I'm going to wait for the next one and use it then. So, and she executed it perfectly. So very, very happy. Both Emily, Gwen, they're brilliant. I'm so lucky to have them. You know, it's wonderful. You hand off something to your artist. They're like, okay, go be brilliant. Be brilliant.
It's nice knowing that you have that confidence in your artist and that, you know, their understanding of your, I couldn't not talk about this art. It really is amazing, and it suits the story and this tone so well.
Yeah.
And I definitely had to make sure that we talked about her.
Yes.
Madeline, this has been absolutely amazing. I bet you have quite the social media presence. I would imagine so, with as many people that talk about you. Do you have?
I would say it was moderately reasonable. You know, it's not crazy.
Okay.
But it's fine.
It exists.
It exists.
Where do they find you?
There's a website, bostonmetaphysicalsociety.com. I'm on Facebook, Boston Metaphysical Society Comic. Twitter is M Holly Rosing. Instagram is MC Holly 1, the numeral 1.
Awesome. Awesome. I want to make sure people, you know, stay in tune, and, you know, I know as a Kickstarter, you're constantly putting out updates, and it's like it's a day job.
Yeah,
you know?
It is.
So, I want to make sure everybody could stay up to date with the stretch goals as they get reached. We probably just reached more as we talk. As quickly as this book seems to be funding. So, Madeline, Holly Rosing, thank you so much for your time. And
thank you. I really appreciate it, Brian. It's
been my pleasure. I'm going to make sure that everybody in my circle knows about this book. I feel like half of them knew before I did already, though. man, this has been an absolute pleasure. And I look forward to all of the success you have coming to you in the future. It's so deserving for what you give back by taking the time to write these books for up-and-coming Kickstarters. As a creator that thrives off of comic book, or as a podcaster that thrives off of comic book creators, for you to give that outlet for other people to continue to come on to my show, I really appreciate that. So, thank you, truly.
Well, thank you. You have a great day, Brian.
You do the same, and we'll be in touch. I have a feeling. You stay safe.
Okay. Thank you. Cheers.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
Lit Gaming Arena. Coming soon.
Video games were only the beginning.
LGA.GG.
Well, there you go, people. Episode 303 in the books. Another creator has been cornered. Madeline Holly Rosing. How about her? Huh? How's about her? Remember, Boston Metaphysical Society is the book. That's the book you want to check out on Kickstarter. Excuse me. Huh. Choking all over myself with excitement. Jesus. Now I hope you've enjoyed this interview. Check out, if you've checked this podcast out on Apple and you haven't already, make sure you leave those 5-star reviews. I'm seeing another wave of reviews come in. I appreciate that, people. Speaking of reviews, right now, if you go over to Podchaser's doing something pretty awesome. They're doing a Meals on Wheels review match type of situation. Every review you leave, doesn't matter, per episode, per podcast, every time you leave a review, and not just star, write something out, take 2 seconds out of your day. They donate 25 cents to Meals on Wheels, and then they give me the opportunity to have them match that by replying to your review. So you leave a review, I'll reply, and 50 cents, and you could do that an unlimited amount of times on Podchaser. So go over to podchaser.com and check that out. Search Cheers to Comics or the other podcast I have for that matter, The Real Brains, same thing. So there you go. Thanks so much, everybody, for tuning in. As always, I command that you stay safe and read responsibly. Cheers, fuckers.
Hi, you're listening to Cheers to Comics podcast.
This is Mark Russell, and you're listening to the Cheers to Comics podcast.
Hey, everyone, I'm Monty Michael Moore, and this is the Cheers to Comics podcast with Brian Wayne.
This is Drew Zucker. You're listening to the Cheers to Comics podcast.
Good morning. Brian Wayne here to tell you about my new podcast, The Real Brains. The Real Brains podcast is a show coming out Daily, dedicated to the everyday struggle of just the average human being. From troubles with rage to anecdotes about very strange human interactions, this podcast really is just somebody that's all too familiar with the struggle. I'm here to let you know that you are not alone, so come laugh at our pain together every single weekday, every place you can catch a podcast. Check out The Real Brains with Brian Wayne. Remember, stay sane.